the people in the street. The chop door gave us the word okay. Vamos is a word from Mexico way. And all of this is a hint, I suspect, of what comes next. I think that this whole world soon come out.
To Win, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Top labor lawyers are questioning the integrity of an El Salvadoran investigation into the murder there of a Teamsters organizer. The AFL-CIO and Teamster General Counsels are calling on the Institute of Human Rights at the Jesuit Central American University in San Salvador to do its own independent investigation. Gilberto Soto was murdered November 5th while making a cell phone call outside his mother's home in El Salvador. Soto was in El Salvador on Teamsters organizing business. Teamsters General Counsel Patrick Szymanski was given information on alleged irregularities in the El Salvadoran investigation, and the labor lawyers now want an independent probe of that killing.
On Wednesday, the South Bay Labor Council sponsored a gift giveaway for San Jose's low-income children. Over 200 volunteers, including seven Santas, helped distribute free toys to more than 10,000 children.
Norma Ray's union, Unite Here, has a new target in the South: HMS Host, the Charlotte Douglas International Airport food vendor. The Charlotte Observer says the union organizing campaign is underway to try to get the 700 retail and food service workers at the airport to join the union. Unite Here started in the Southern textile mills and recently organized one in Alabama that has a U.S. military contract, so the jobs there are likely to stay in the U.S. The South is often a hard sell for unions, but Unite Here's Harris Rayner says with the growth in the service sector, that's where the workers are now in the South, and so organizing efforts are underway. Unite Here has been holding meetings with the airport workers touting union membership. The target of Unite Here's organizing drive is owned by an Italian company and operates food concessions at 70 airports around the world. The Carolinas are among the least unionized states in the nation.
It's not a very merry Christmas for Arizona's immigrant population, as a federal judge lifted the injunction against Proposition 200 yesterday, allowing it to take effect. Approved in a state ballot initiative, the law requires state workers to check the legal residency of those applying for benefits. And if an applicant is found to lack proper documentation, the law requires state employees to report the person in writing or face a misdemeanor charge. Proposition opponents are planning to appeal to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Workers are not letting the Grinch steal Christmas this year. Walmart was voted Grinch of the Year Wednesday in a national poll conducted by Jobs with Justice. Walmart won the Grinch title for being the largest employer in the U.S. that treats its workers the worst. Jobs with Justice says Walmart pays poverty wages and sets such high barriers for health care that many workers have to rely on public aid and food stamps. George W. Bush was voted Grinch of 2003.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
In the cacophony of Christmas commercialism, it can be difficult even to recall that it's about Jesus. But this is hardly the only time that Jesus gets lost. Take politics. In the recent presidential run, much was made by George W. and his handlers of his supposedly superior moral values based on his commitment to Jesus. But before we let Bush steal away with the robe of Jesus and don it as a Republican garment, let's reflect a moment on the moral teachings of this man from Nazareth. Like George, I grew up in a Methodist church in Texas. Unlike George, I didn't find any burning anti-liberal theology there. My little church might have considered itself conservative, but only in terms of its commitment to the deeply egalitarian, truly progressive values we found in the biblical teachings of Jesus. I recall many a sermon that began with Jesus' words in Matthew 19:24, "It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God." I recall that the greatest sin of all, the root of all evil, Jesus said, is the love of money. I recall the passionate retelling of how Jesus threw the money changers out of the temple, threw them out for charging interest rates far less than usurious bankers now charge us on our Visas and MasterCards, by the way. I recall also that Jesus fed all the masses that day on the hillside at the Sea of Galilee, not turning anyone away who lacked a platinum card to buy fishes and loaves. And I recall that Jesus flatly said, "You cannot serve both God and mammon." In the Good Book, Jesus talks more about economic justice than nearly any other subject, and the apostles made clear that the most important ethical religious test of Judeo-Christian faith is in how we treat the least wealthy, least important among us. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's call on Bush, and the Democrats too, to live up to these moral values before they claim that Jesus is on their side.
1 in 4 adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on December 24th, Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas, Happy Festivus, Joyous Saturnalia, whatever. We're going to have actually a fascinating day. At the top of the second hour of the program, we're going to have a woman on with the New England Antiquities Research Association here in Vermont. They have found a number of megalithic sites, sites that go back thousands of years here in Vermont, inscribed with Celtic symbols from like pre-49 BC, pre-Roman invasion of England, and just some fascinating stuff. Excuse me. And that indicated a celebration around this time of year that had to do with the winter solstice. And then we're going to have on Steve Larson, who was the protege of Joseph Campbell, wrote the only authorized biography of Joseph Campbell, going to talk about the significance of Christmas. And we're going to have Rabbi Michael Lerner on talking about Christmas and the right-wing attack on this phony attack on Christmas that they've got. So the second and third hour of our program are going to be kind of our Christmas time, Christmas Day. But our first hour, it's Friday, of course, so it's time for Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders, in 1991, became the first independent congressman elected in over 40 years. He has since been reelected 7 times, longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. His website is bernie.house.gov. And it's always full of great information. I think of Bernie as America's congressman, and very, very pleased to have you with us again, Bernie. You're working on Christmas Eve, too.
How are you, Tom?
Great, great.
All right, let me just take this opportunity to wish all of the listeners a very happy holiday season and a prosperous and healthy and hopefully a peaceful new year.
Yeah, and hopefully the peaceful part is particularly important. By the way, let me just put this out. Our website, tomhartman.com, of course. But if anybody, if you want to call, if you have a question for Congressman Sanders, he loves to take calls and answer questions, whatever the topic may be, 1-866, toll-free, 1-866-889-8894. Bernie, I just got an email pointing me to a story that just went up on the Jerusalem Post just a couple of hours ago that I wanted to get your take on, or at least let you know about. The headline is U.S. may strike at Baathists in Syria. And essentially the article says that we're contemplating doing what we did in Cambodia during the Vietnam War. The U.S. is contemplating incursions into Syrian territory in an attempt to kill or capture Iraqi Baathists who it believes are directing at least part of the attacks against U.S. targets in Iraq. And then they quote senior administration officials saying that the Syrians have got to start worrying about whether we would take cross-border military action, and saying when you get a tragedy like the attack in Mosul, and it reminds people this is still a very serious problem. If I were Syria, I'd be worried, the senior administration officials said. Any info on this? Any thoughts on this? What's your...
Only let's hope they're just trying to frighten Syria. The idea of the United States attacking another country, which would further inflame world opinion against us and spread that war, the horrendous situation currently in Iraq, is just a frightening thought. But with the folks in the White House, one never knows what to expect, but I hope and expect that that will not take place.
Yeah. Let's.
Even for the Bush administration, that may be going a bit too far. And sometimes they use the media to frighten people, but do not intend to do
well,
what they say.
Yeah, let's hope so. They quote U.S. President George W. Bush. He said, this week, U.S. President George W. Bush warned of possible new sanctions in Syria. And then he says, nothing's been taken off the table. And they're interpreting that as the possibility.
I think, you know, when we talk about Iraq, we all know that we had another terrible week there with dozens of Americans getting killed, not only in Mosul, but also, again, in Fallujah. And the number of deaths are now over 1,300. The number of casualties are well over 10,000. Great concern about the depletion of the National Guard and sending over 50, 55-year-old folks who never in a million years were prepared or expected to go over there. And the question of when it ends. And it's amazing that we have a president who has not yet developed an exit strategy. Yeah. How many more years will the war be going on? How many more people will die? How much more money will be spent? How many more miscalculations will take place? How much more will we be antagonizing and creating enemies all over the world? And those are some of the questions that this president has got to be forced to answer.
Yeah, and he's not. He's basically just taking a pass on it. Let's go to the telephones. Margaret in Asheville, I'm assuming that's North Carolina, Margaret?
Yes.
On the line. Hey, Margaret, welcome to the program. You're live
thank
with
you.
Congressman Sanders.
Thank you very much. And my question is, will there be a senator that will support the representatives in the House who are potentially going to question the Electoral College counting?
Bernie, your thoughts?
Margaret, I just don't know the answer to that. I'm not in the Senate. I don't know that. I think that while I know the Internet is full of a lot of discussion of this issue, and I could be wrong on this, but my impression is, at least in the House, I've not heard of House members of Ohio who are urging that at this moment. I think in terms of the election, I think what there is pretty strong evidence that voting machines seem to be quite scarce around Democratic strongholds, that in Democratic areas people were kept waiting online. No question that there were people who peeled off, that the Democratic vote was less than it should have been, yeah. And that is absolutely unacceptable and is worthy of an investigation unto itself. But I am not terribly aware that too many elected officials in Ohio think that Kerry won the state.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Bernie. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. I want to add, yesterday somebody had called the show and asked, what happens if a senator, what happens if a congressman, as the Black Caucus did in 2000, the Congressional Black Caucus, virtually every member of it, if a representative comes up and says, is there a senator who will sign on, and a senator steps up, say it's some people are talking about Robert Byrd, for example, as being a pretty brave guy. Then the question is, what happens? And I have this Congressional Research Service report about this by Thomas H. Neal.
Right.
And he says basically what happens is the moment that a senator says, yes, I'll sign on, the Senate then leaves the joint chamber. The House and Senate both go into deliberations. They have 2 hours. No member has more than 5 minutes to speak.
Right.
At the end of those 2 hours, both groups have to vote more than a majority that to not accept the vote. And if either one doesn't vote more than a majority, then when they go back into joint session, the electoral vote is accepted regardless of the objections. Is that correct, Bernie?
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Yeah, so
I mean, I don't think anyone should hold their breath and think that the election is somehow going to be overturned. It ain't going to happen. I think that what should happen, and John Conyers, a good friend of mine from Michigan, is doing a good job, is raising important issues. And it's not only the location and the number of voting precincts and where they're located. You know, as you and I have talked about every week, and as you have written a lot, this whole question about touchscreen balloting and the fact that there is no capability of doing recounts is a huge issue that Congress has got to address.
Yeah. There's a video over on the truthout.org site of one of the voting machine company folks saying that in five different counties in Ohio, he's gone in and adjusted the machines now to prepare them for the recount. And this has got a lot of people really freaked out, even though it may be a completely innocent thing, you know, but a lot of people are very, very concerned about this. Let's go back to the phones here. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Rick, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, I commend you guys for being on the radio today.
Well, that's what you do on radio.
Public service. Well, Bernie, I was going to ask you about drug importation. I saw you on one of the cable shows last night, and then I saw the folks on Fox Network, Fox News Network, Fox News Channel, I guess they call it, talking about this drug importation. And
yeah.
Of course, you know all the horror stories. We can't.
Yep.
We can't make sure it's safe. Fred Barnes was saying, well, if we bring all that stuff in from Canada, then there'll be more of a demand for it, and then the price will go up. And can you dispense with all of the horror stories?
Oh, Rick, I can tell you more than you ever wanted to know, because this is an issue I've been involved in with years. In fact, I was the first member of Congress to take constituents over the Canadian border about 5 years ago, at which time, by the way, women with breast cancer were able to purchase tamoxifen, a widely prescribed breast cancer drug, for, hold on to your hats, one-tenth of the price they were paying in the United States. Breast cancer, people fighting for their lives, one-tenth of the price. What people should understand when we talk about reimportation or anything else to do with the pharmaceutical industry, that when you're dealing with drug companies, you are dealing with the most powerful lobby and industry in the United States of America, if not in the world. And, you know, Tom, this is an issue we can have five shows on and not cover all of the matter. They have spent in the last couple of years hundreds of millions of dollars making certain that American consumers pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. In Washington now, I've heard differing figures, there's between 600 and 1,000 paid lobbyists. And these are not kids who are lobbying. These are former leaders of the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the most powerful law firms in Washington, D.C. And they, any time there's any kind of legislation or effort to lower the cost of prescription drugs like locusts, these lobbyists descend on Capitol Hill and offices to make sure that the members of Congress vote for the industry. Recently, this is a metaphor of what goes on in Washington today. The prescription drug Medicare bill, this disastrous bill that the Republicans passed a year and a half ago, was written by a guy named Billy Torzin.
Yes.
Billy Torzin was the chairman of the Commerce Committee in the House, a congressman from Louisiana. Let the listeners now guess where Billy Torzin, the guy who wrote the bill for the pharmaceutical industry, which passed at 5 o'clock in the morning after they kept the rolls open for 3 hours. Tom, here it is.
Yeah.
Where does Billy Tarzan now work?
Well, could it be, Bernie, that the pharmaceutical industry is giving him millions of dollars a year to work for them?
Tom, you are so damn smart, it is incredible. Here it is. You guessed it. No, he is not working for low-income senior citizens in the fight to lower prescription drugs. That's the wrong answer.
No.
The right answer is, after having written the bill for the industry, he now is getting $2 million a year, we are told, as the director of pharma. I guess it'll come on at the beginning of the year, the trade group of the pharmaceutical industry. And that's how corrupt the whole situation is. So the issue of reimportation is all that we are saying, and the reason we came forth with that idea is that it brought along a number of conservative Republicans who say, hey, we're conservative Republicans. We believe, I don't, they do, in free trade. We got all kinds of products from around the world. Why not safe and affordable prescription drugs from Canada and Europe? Well, we passed that bill in the House. We have the votes in the Senate if the Republican leadership allows it. And everything the administration is saying is just untrue.
It's just nonsense. It's extraordinary. We're with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Brunch with Bernie, our number 1-866-889-8894. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel? Seattle?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Christmas always goes too fast. It's up to us to make it last. And all I want for Christmas is love.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment of our program. Every Friday, the first hour of our program, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, America's independent congressman. And Bernie, we've got, Jim in Texas on the road driving a truck. Hey, Jim, my brother-in-law, Louise's brother, is a sea captain on the Great Lakes. He's working today, too. I guess there's a lot of folks out there who are helping keep American commerce alive, and you're one of them. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
What's up?
I always hear about Social Security reform, and they say, well, the problem is that by law, Social Security is mandated that we end up buying the cheapest or the lowest rate bonds issued by the government. If this is so correct, then why doesn't Bush see that it's very simple? Change the mandate so that the same investments that the military can make for the pension for them, so for the military retirees, and the same pension investments that Congress can make for itself, for its pensions, are also available to Social Security. And also, why don't
they
lock the box so that they can't steal from it anymore?
Okay, Jim, thanks for raising those issues, because the issue of Social Security certainly is going to be an issue very high on the agenda in the coming Congress. Let me say a couple of things that answer Jim's good question. Number one, Jim, and anyone else, when you turn on the TV and you hear somebody telling you that Social Security is in crisis or Social Security is going bankrupt, I can't say it in any other way other than to say they're lying to you. It's just not true. Depending on which study you look at, whether it's the Social Security trustees or the Congressional Budget Office, Social Security will be able to pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American either for the next 38 years or the next 48 years, depending on your kind of economic projections and how you see the growth rate in the country. Social Security is not in crisis. With modest changes, such as lifting the cap, which would allow wealthier people to contribute more into the Social Security Trust Fund rather than keeping it just at $89,000, we can add decades more to the life of Social Security and keep it strong for our kids and our grandchildren. So the first point is Social Security is not going bankrupt. And when you hear about it being in crisis, all you're hearing is people representing Wall Street wanting to privatize Social Security so they can have all these young workers investing in Wall Street and making all kinds of commissions. Without going into a long song and dance, that path leads to disaster. There will be a $2 trillion gap in the Social Security Trust Fund, which will mean either lower benefits for retirees from Social Security, extending the retirement age, or lowering COLAs.
This is if
or
they,
some
if
combination
they,
of all of those things.
This is if they privatize it.
If they move to privatization.
Bernie, did you know that right now if you call Social Security and you get put on hold, while you're on hold, you hear an announcement that tells you that the trust fund is about to go broke and the administration's going to fix it?
I do know that.
This is outrageous.
There are people who are. All right, so that's the first thing. The second point is what Jim is talking about is, should Social Security invest some of its huge sums of money in other than government securities? That's what he's asking.
Right.
The advantage of that is that there is a possibility that the rate of return will be higher. And that's a good point. Negative is that obviously there is more risk involved. Right now, Social Security is invested in federal bonds, which are the safest form of investment that there exists in the planet. The government has never failed to pay those bonds. But to answer Jim's question, there are people who are talking about the possibility of having diversified investments that will be as safe as possible.
Yeah. Okay, good one. Thank you. Congressman Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, the first hour of our Friday program, 29 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Rich in Chicago, Raymond in Michigan. You're next. Hang on. We'll be right back.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Top labor lawyers are questioning the integrity of an El Salvadoran investigation into the murder there of a Teamsters organizer. The AFL-CIO and Teamster General Counsels are calling on the Institute of Human Rights at the Jesuit Central American University in San Salvador to do its own independent investigation. Gilberto Soto was murdered November 5th while making a cell phone call outside his mother's home in El Salvador. Soto was in El Salvador on Teamsters organizing business. Teamsters General Counsel Patrick Szymanski was given information on alleged irregularities in the El Salvadoran investigation, and the labor lawyers now want an independent probe of that killing.
On Wednesday, the South Bay Labor Council sponsored a gift giveaway for San Jose's low-income children. Over 200 volunteers, including seven Santas, helped distribute free toys to more than 10,000 children.
Norma Ray's union, Unite Here, has a new target in the South, HMS Host, the Charlotte Douglas International Airport food vendor. The Charlotte Observer says the union organizing campaign is underway to try to get the seven retail and food service workers at the airport to join the union. Unite Here started in the Southern textile mills and recently organized one in Alabama that has a U.S. military contract, so the jobs there are likely to stay in the U.S. The South is often a hard sell for unions, but Unite Here's Harris Rayner says with the growth in the service sector, that's where the workers are now in the South, and so organizing efforts are underway. Unite Here has been holding meetings with the airport workers touting union membership. The target of Unite Here's organizing drive is owned by an Italian company and operates food concessions at 70 airports around the world. The Carolinas are among the least unionized states in the nation.
It's not a very merry Christmas for Arizona's immigrant population, as a federal judge lifted the injunction against Proposition 200 yesterday, allowing it to take effect. Approved in a state ballot initiative, the law requires state workers to check the legal residency of those applying for benefits. And if an applicant is found to lack proper documentation, the law requires state employees to report the person in writing or face a misdemeanor charge. Proposition opponents are planning to appeal to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Workers are not letting the Grinch steal Christmas this year. Walmart was voted Grinch of the Year Wednesday in a national poll conducted by Jobs with Justice. Walmart won the Grinch title for being the largest employer in the U.S. that treats its workers the worst. Jobs with Justice says Walmart pays poverty wages and sets such high barriers for health care that many workers have to rely on public aid and food stamps. George W. Bush was voted Grinch of 2003.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
On the first day of Bushmas, my Supreme Court gave to me a duly selected presidency. On the second day of Bushmas, my president gave to me $300. Remember? Instead of a democracy. On the third day of Bushmas, my president gave to me no Kyoto Protocol, so I could warm up to a check for $300 instead of a democracy.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I had said Rich in Chicago and Raymond in Michigan are next, but actually I should have looked a little farther up on my screen. Martha in Massachusetts has actually been waiting on hold the longest. Martha, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Great. I just want to make a comment about on C-SPAN, they have every day from 7 to 10, they have people calling in, and they'll have a number for you to call for if you supported Bush. They'll have another number for if you supported Kerry, and then there's another number if you supported other persons. Well, there was a few days ago, some poor woman called in, and she had voted for Kerry. And this woman was really sobbing. She was just so upset. She was so worried about what's going to happen to our country if the present administration keeps going in the direction that they're going in. And I have to say that I really feel the same way. Mm. And now I've heard on CNN this morning that Bush is going to reintroduce his picks for the Supreme Court.
No, these 20 federal judgeships.
Yeah.
But the Republicans are going to pass a law that says the Democrats can't use the filibuster anymore.
Perhaps.
Well, that's something that they have threatened to do, but in order to pass that law, they're going to have to break the filibuster. It's not quite so easily done as they would like, but they're threatening that. In other words, to pass that, I suspect there would be a filibuster. The problem now is there are, I think, 45 Democrats in the Senate. Some of them are soft, and we're going to have to put some backbone under these guys to continue the fight. What we don't want, I mean, the truth of the matter is, there are some moderate or even some conservative Republicans out there who can make good federal judges. What Bush is doing is going to the extreme right wing of his party, bringing in people who really do not believe in basic constitutional rights, and it is a huge concern.
Yeah. Bernie, before we get another call, a couple of folks in our chat room, which people can get to by going to tomhartman.com and clicking on live chat, have asked, now that the conservatives are in power, what happened to the congressional term limits suggestions and the balanced budget amendment that they were continuously pushing forward?
What term limits? What congressional? Well, you know, those things are an ancient history. We no longer talk about it. When the Democrats were in power, the great goal was to have term limits. People shouldn't stay in office too long. That's long been forgotten, and nobody talks about it anymore.
Yeah, nor the balanced budget amendment, it seems.
How can you talk about a balanced budget amendment when these guys are running up the largest deficit in American history?
Yeah, well said. Let's go to Rich in Chicago. Rich, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Oh, hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie. How are you guys doing? Happy holidays
Good.
To you.
Thank you.
Hey, Bernie, can you look in your crystal ball, and you guys were just talking about the deficit and the budget. You know, it seems so short-sighted what they're going, but there must be some sort of long-term agenda and a reason that the government's acting the way they are, like a drunken monkey spending this money. And the second part is, can you look in your crystal ball and give us a message of hope of what
Sure.
can, you know, lay people do to start to get
Good.
Some sort of grassroots you know, movement going that we can make a statement that there needs to be some sort of change. Obviously, the vote didn't work out for the presidential election, but is there something else that we can do?
Sure.
Good question.
Okay. You know, let me answer Rich's very good questions twofold. It's not very complicated to understand what the Bush administration is about. This is their theory, and if you read between the lines, you can see it. They don't hide it. Number one, you give huge tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country. You spend a whole lot of money on the military, and you engage in an aggressive foreign policy, which costs a lot of money. You run up a huge deficit and a national debt. You go before the American people and you say, gee, guess what? Amazing. We have a huge deficit. We're going to have to cut back. Okay, well, where do we cut back? Obviously, you're going to cut back on Medicaid. You're going to cut back on Medicare. There was a piece in the paper just the other day. They're going to cut back on Pell Grants. Right now, the average college graduate in America of a four-year college is leaving $17,000 in debt. Bush is going to be cutting back on Pell Grants. Fewer people will be able to get it. That's the way you do that. Their goal is not even just financial. Their goal is to destroy the capability of the United States government to provide services to the people of this country and to privatize all of that, to do away with the guarantees that people have fought for decades, guaranteed Social Security benefits, guaranteed Medicare, guaranteed Medicaid, guaranteed minimum wage, so forth and so on, affordable housing. They want to destroy all of that, and they want to move in that direction. They will, under the guise of we have to deal with the deficit. Needless to say, the idea of retreating on the hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks given to millionaires and billionaires, that will not be on their agenda. Doing away with corporate welfare, that will not be on their agenda. Doing away with wasteful weapon systems will not be on their agenda. So that's kind of what they have in mind. The answer, I think, to Rich's question, am I pessimistic? I'm not. I think that what you're finding politically and you're finding all over this country is when candidates talk about the real interest facing American people, the fact that our health care system is disintegrating, we're the only country in the world without a national health care program, the fact that the middle class is collapsing and the gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider, that we have a terrible trade policy, which is sending millions of jobs to China. When people talk those issues, working people say, yeah, we're going to get involved. And what we have seen is some really good victories. You know, in Montana, for example, Tom, I don't know if we have any listeners in Montana, do we?
We don't have a radio station in Montana, but Sirius Satellite certainly covers the entire state.
All right. In Montana, which people say, oh, Montana, that's a really conservative state. Guess what? They elected a progressive Democrat as their governor, a fellow named Brian Schweitz, who I'm confident is going to do a good job. So I think, to answer Rich's question, there has got to be a profound change in political culture. People who are taking our jobs to China, who are making billions on health care when Americans can't afford health care, the drug companies. If we focus on those people, if we go out beyond our zone of comfort, if we talk to people who disagree with us on this or that issue, but get people united on trying to create an economy and a health care system that works for everybody, I am not unoptimistic that we're going to do very, very well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bernie, your point that what these guys are about is undoing all these programs, it's really they're talking about rolling back the New Deal. And I have to share with you, Rush Limbaugh, of all things, actually came right out and said this. This is just an 8-second clip. This is from his show from last Thursday. Just listen to this.
So what? Get over it. Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
Isn't that chilling?
Well, Roosevelt is dead, but what Roosevelt said and his legacy and the impact he's had on the country is to say that we are a nation where we care about people, that the government and the economy should not just function for the very wealthy and the large corporations. And I think that that dream that we are a nation, that we're going to take care of all of our people, in fact, lives on despite Rush Limbaugh's rantings.
Amen.
And
Amen. Yeah.
We're certainly not going to give up on that vision.
Yep. Okay, let's move along here. Raymond in Cement City, Michigan. Hey, Raymond, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning. Merry Christmas to both y'all.
Thank you.
Two quick points on the way to a question. First of all, you know, I think this thing with the filibuster, I think the Republicans just want to keep that up to keep fear in the Democrats so they can push them around. It's a tactic. And number two, if you remember, I probably don't, a couple of years ago when they did this invasion in Iraq, who was it? The CIA director was on the ex Woolsey. Anyways, he
James Woolsey.
We started piping up about the next place we're going is Syria, and whoever was on there with him was Pearl or somebody was kind of like kicking him to shut up. So I think these people have Syria on their mind.
Yeah.
But to the point I want to get to, we talk about Social Security. I would like to know where the Social Security balance would be if the Social Security fund was paid at the bond rate that the rest of the market gets, like the long-term 10-year bond rate. I think it would be much higher at this point, and I think right now they pay 2% or even nothing, I think. But my point would be is that to look at the impact of what they're trying to do is if you reevaluate that balance at that new rate,
right,
and then say, okay, we'll give everybody the 20% of it, but we'll give it to you in T-bonds, which the T-bonds would have to be set up from, you know, that's what the debt really would be. And then they could trade them, and then what would that do to the economy? What would that do? That's kind of, a way of kind of evaluating some of how this functions in terms of market value and the impact it would have on the government debt and the viability of the fund and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, your thoughts, Bernie?
Well, Raymond's going in a lot of interesting directions.
I think he's still thinking of Social Security as a retirement fund rather than an insurance program, too.
Well, the issue here, and there are some people who are, and Rich earlier in the program asked the same question, I think.
Yeah.
Can the fund bring in more money with, say, diversified, conservative, if you like, investments? Will that be better long-term than just in Treasury bonds? And there are some people who think yes. Sensible people. The negative, obviously, is that you're introducing an element of risk that is greater than what we have right now, which, given the fact that the United States government has never defaulted on a bond, there's virtually no risk. So that's what the trade-off is. But I should tell Raymond that is an issue that people are, in fact, looking at.
Interesting. Okay. 1-866.
Let me reiterate, sure. Having said that, I don't want Raymond or anybody else to believe for one moment that Social Security is in crisis. As I mentioned earlier, depending on the study, and no one disagrees with that, Social Security will pay off every nickel owed to every eligible American for the next 38 or 48 years. So we are not in a crisis situation. We have the time to be thoughtful about how we preserve and strengthen Social Security.
Yeah, amen. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Paul in Happy Camp, California. That's a new city on me, Paul.
Yep. We're a land island in the middle of a national forest, about 75 miles from the nearest Walmart.
Remarkable. Wonderful. Well, welcome to the
program. Is everybody happy there, Paul?
Mostly happy. Mr. Camp found gold 150 couple years ago, and they're still pulling out of the creeks today.
Okay.
Amazing.
Christopher Reeves and I broke the same bone. Mine was a Peterbilt, his was a horse. My memory's a little tainted, but you guys seem to have real great memory. Sometime about 4 years ago, I sat in this very chair and I heard King George say to me through the magic tube, he would not stand for anyone in his cabinet who had even the slightest appearance of impropriety. Now, I remember those words because they were said to me by a thief who took part of my inheritance, so it stuck good. I can't find it on the web anywhere. I find a lot of the restore honor and dignity crap, but nothing that then followed through with the words that he would not stand for anyone with the slightest appearance of impropriety in his cabinet. Do you guys remember this statement?
You know, I have vague memories of it, Paul, but I don't know that I could lead you directly to where it was.
Yeah. And I
don't
want,
either, Paul.
That was a, to me, that was a promise that I wanted to believe in, you know, and...
Well, George Bush has made a lot of promises, Paul, and
so if his... anyone on of all your listeners can bring you guys back to that,
okay,
where he says that he wouldn't stand for it, I think it might have been around when they started talking about Cheney and his energy connections and crap.
Yeah. Okay. All right. If anybody gets that, you know, give us a call and let us know, and we'll pass it along to you, Paul. Thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Max in Michigan is on the line. Hey, Max, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Bernie. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make an observation about the Social Security comments that Bernie's making, and that is that last weekend I heard, I'll bet you, at least 20 times on the major networks and on NPR and on PBS stations of this $10 trillion number thrown around. Everybody was quoting the $10 trillion number, that it's urgent that we fix it right now, that we've got this $10 trillion spending gap. And I don't know. I mean, it's just, it appears to be a myth that has taken foothold.
Okay. What this $10 trillion number is about is looking out into the infinite future. In other words, what they're saying is if we look out forever and ever, not even 75 years, usually when we talk about Social Security, you say, okay, how do you fund it for the next 75 years? What these guys are doing is looking into what they call the infinite horizon baseline. If you took that same argument into military spending, for example, and put it out into the infinite future, you'd be talking about a lot more money than that. If you talked about tax breaks for the rich, you'd be looking in a similar way. It's a phony analysis. It doesn't mean anything. What we want to do and what we usually do is say, okay, how is it going to go into the next 75 years? In the next 75 years, it is an absolutely manageable problem. And all of this stuff about $10 trillion is total and absolute nonsense. Who knows what the economy is going to be like in the infinite future?
Good one. Thanks, Max, for the call. Cassie in Arizona City on the line. Hey, Cassie, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. I wanted to ask, do you think that Congress really has the heart to hold off a draft?
Very good question. And here's where the problem is. For the president, from the president's perspective, the negative of a draft is that he's suddenly going to involve the middle class and the upper middle class in foreign policy, which is not something that he wanted any more than Lyndon Johnson wanted during Vietnam. It's one thing when you have a volunteer army made up of lower-income people. Maybe we'll discuss this after the break.
Yeah, okay, we'll pick this up on the other side. Thanks, Bernie, for catching that music there. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-888-889-8894 to talk with Bernie Sanders. We'll be right back.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Vaxin Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout. Surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90%. Ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Of yourself. Merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light.
And welcome in us before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman radio program, our brunch with Bernie, a Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman with us this hour. Bernie, just in apropos to the last question, and I know you wanted to finish commenting, and I just wanted to share with you, on June 18, 1813, after Jefferson had retired from being president of the United States, he wrote a letter to James Monroe, who would be the future president. And he said, it's more a subject about military draft. He said, it is more a subject of joy that we have so few of the desperate characters which compose modern regular armies. He said, where there is no oppression, there will be no pauper hirelings. And in another letter to Ben Rush, he talked about how he hoped that America would never become a nation where its young would sell themselves for a sixpence to be shot at. I'll give you that to step off on.
Yeah. Well, the dilemma that Bush has right now is the military is greatly overextended. Recruitment for the National Guard is not high. And they're bringing into Iraq guys who are 50, 55 years old who never in a million years expected to be there. So to answer Kathy's question, if you continue to have the kind of aggressive, huge amount of soldiers, the idea of a draft is not an impossibility. I certainly am going to oppose it, and I'm going to oppose the militaristic foreign policy of Bush. But if he keeps going along his direction, yeah, it is not impossible that the issue of the draft will be raised.
Bernie, the World Trade Organization has decided to drop at the end of this year, in another week, all tariffs on textiles, or the U.S. is, I guess, and European countries are at the behest of the WTO. China says that they're going to voluntarily slowly increase. They control about 17% of the world's textile trade, but projections are that within 5 years they may control as much as half of the world's textile trade, wiping out another million people, workers in the United States. Is Congress...
And in other developing countries, by the way.
Yeah, Bangladesh is terrified of this. The textiles are their major export. What's being
done? There's an issue, Tom, that we need, again, a whole hour discussion. That is China. And the $64... question there, the question we should be focusing on is, why is corporate America destroying the middle class of this country, throwing our workers out on the street and moving lock, stock, and barrel to China, which I think most economists appreciate will be the major economic power in the world in the next 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, already moving in that direction. They're now the second largest consumer of oil in the world. They just surpassed Japan a few months ago. It's amazing. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us today on Christmas Eve, Bernie. Really,
good to be with you.
Really good.
Happy holidays to everyone.
Thank you, and we'll see you next week. Same time, right. Same place. Okay, it's the Tom Hartman radio program discussing solutions and not false promises, telling the truth that multinational corporations would rather you really weren't aware of.
have been listening to the Tom Hartman Program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, "To people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times." Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Top labor lawyers are questioning the integrity of an El Salvadoran investigation into the murder there of a Teamsters organizer. The AFL-CIO and Teamster General Counsels are calling on the Institute of Human Rights at the Jesuit Central American University in San Salvador to do its own independent investigation. Gilberto Soto was murdered November 5th while making a cell phone call outside his mother's home in El Salvador. Soto was in El Salvador on Teamsters organizing business. Teamsters General Counsel Patrick Szymanski was given information on alleged irregularities in the El Salvadoran investigation, and the labor lawyers now want an independent probe of that killing.
On Wednesday, the South Bay Labor Council sponsored a gift giveaway for San Jose's low-income children. Over 200 volunteers, including seven Santas, helped distribute free toys to more than 10,000 children.
Norma Ray's union, Unite Here, has a new target in the South. HMS Host, the Charlotte Douglas International Airport food vendor. The Charlotte Observer says the union organizing campaign is underway to try to get the 700 retail and food service workers at the airport to join the union. Unite Here started in the Southern Textile Mills and recently organized one in Alabama that has a U.S. military contract, so the jobs there are likely to stay in the U.S. The South is often a hard sell for unions, but Unite Here's Harris Rayner says with the growth in the service sector, that's where the workers are now in the South, and so organizing efforts are underway. Unite Here has been holding meetings with the airport workers touting union membership. The target of Unite Here's organizing drive is owned by an Italian company and operates food concessions at 70 airports around the world. The Carolinas are among the least unionized states in the nation.
It's not a very merry Christmas for Arizona's immigrant population, as a federal judge lifted the injunction against Proposition 200 yesterday, allowing it to take effect. Approved in a state ballot initiative, the law requires state workers to check the legal residency of those applying for benefits. And if an applicant is found to lack proper documentation, the law requires state employees to report the person in writing or face a misdemeanor charge. Proposition opponents are planning to appeal to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Workers are not letting the Grinch steal Christmas this year. Walmart was voted Grinch of the Year Wednesday in a national poll conducted by Jobs with Justice. Walmart won the Grinch title for being the largest employer in the U.S. that treats its workers the worst. Jobs with Justice says Walmart pays poverty wages and sets such high barriers for health care that many workers have to rely on public aid and food stamps. George W. Bush was voted Grinch of 2003.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Time for another report.
from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, two big-time football colleges do something right. In this day of big-money domination of so-called amateur sports, it's a man-bites-dog type of newsflash when any of our educational institutions choose principal over cash. Believe it or not, though, this is what the University of Michigan and Ohio State have just done. Actually, even in this case, principal had to run awfully fast to catch up to cash. Athletic officials of both universities had agreed to let telephone giant SBC Communications, Inc. change the name of the annual Michigan-Ohio State football clash. This long-standing sports rivalry is so intense that it is known simply as the game. But waving pom-poms of money totaling $500,000 for each school, the corporation persuaded the athletic departments to let it intrude into the event by redubbing it the SBC Michigan-Ohio State Classic. The athletic directors who negotiated the deal announced it publicly, gushing that it was a financial bonanza and a fine example of public-private partnerships in college sports. But fumble! They had forgotten to mention this little alteration of Michigan-Ohio State tradition to their university presidents. The presidents first learned about it from irate alumni and news reports, all blasting the officials for tarnishing the game's proud history with their crass grab for corporate cash. So, 2 days after their public praise for the deal, the athletic directors were back before the media running a reverse. In the final analysis, said the subdued Michigan official, the SBC renaming was inconsistent with the values that we share with a greater Michigan family. This is Jim Hightower saying, way to go, team! It was close, but it shows that when people speak out, principle can defeat money.
1 in 4 adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Yes, every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his meds. We're going to take a break from politics here. So it is Christmas Eve, and Merry Christmas to those of you who celebrate Christmas. What's interesting is this time of year, right around the winter solstice, is a time that people have been noticing, celebrating, noting, paying attention to, doing things about, considering very, very important. For a long, long time. And one of the most fascinating stories about this with regard to us here in North America is how long this has been going on and what might be out there that tells us about this. Donna Martin is the co-coordinator, the Vermont chapter, of NERA, which is the New England Antiquities Research Association, a group that for a number of years I was a member of and getting their journal. These folks have discovered some absolutely extraordinary things here in New England. Donna, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Tom.
Pleased to have you on. Tell us, if you don't mind, about this discovery that was made near Woodstock, Vermont.
Yes. There is what we call a stone chamber. We call it the Calendar One site. The reason we call it the Calendar One site is this large stone chamber is oriented to the winter solstice sunrise. On December 21st, I have stood inside a number of times and had the excitement of watching the sun rise in the far distance, right up in the center of a notch in two mountains, the sun comes into the chamber at that time and floods the back of the chamber.
That's remarkable. So it's an astronomical device to determine when the solstice is. When's the shortest day of the year?
That's right. That's what we feel it was.
Right, just like Stonehenge apparently was, and
yes,
similar
it
sites.
Seems to be very much the same type of structure or a site. And there are many things on that site besides the chamber as well that are involved with the alignments. Standing stones and inscriptions, many, many more things.
Yeah, for example, the standing stones, sort of like Stonehenge, you mean? This is like a Stonehenge
well,
here in North America?
Well, no, not nearly as large or elaborately placed as in Stonehenge. But for instance, as you enter into the area where the chamber is, there is a standing stone which stands approximately 8 feet tall. And if you do a true north-south alignment check on that stone, from that stone to another stone beyond the chamber, you will find that is a true north-south alignment stone. On the other stone at the end of the line, there is a petroglyph, a carving in the stone, which is the symbol of Baal, B-A-A-L. He was considered by ancient cultures as a sun god who regulated the world and regulated the weathers and so forth.
Now,
and this, of course, was very important to the ancient people in the area.
But here's where it gets really remarkable, Donna Martin. You've got a stone carving of Baal. You've got Celtic symbols carved into these stones mm-hmm. and into this dome. And this is here in Vermont, and there are other sites like this all around New England. And yet Baal wasn't worshipped in Europe pretty much after the Roman conquest of the British Isles in, what was it, 54 BC, I believe. So that seems to indicate that this thing was constructed more than 2,000 years ago by people who had knowledge of European gods.
That's what it seems to us. In fact, we're talking about at least 3,300 B.C.
3,300. So 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Whoa.
Now, there's no way we can prove that, except that when we have a site like the one in South Woodstock, which, by the way, is one of the most exciting sites that we have found, the researchers have found in all of New England, and when we find so many different indications in one site that point back to that time, we feel that's pretty much proof.
Now, the thing that just really drew me to the New England Antiquities Research Association is that you folks are kind of like a merry band of discoverers, if I may. I mean, there have been hundreds of these sites found around New England over the last 50 years or so.
Yes.
Tell me about some.
We've been researching since 1964. The NERA members have been.
Uh-huh. And originally, people assumed that these sites had to do with the Abenakis, with the Native Americans, or something like that. But it appears not to be the case.
Some people do feel that, and frankly, I think that that some of them. I know that some of them here in Vermont are still used by some of the Abenaki people as very sacred sites. But whether they actually developed them or not, as I say, there's no way of knowing. And of course, we wonder how did these Celtic symbols and indications of the Mediterranean area arrive there.
Yeah,
I think that I really feel strongly myself that there and other people do too, that both Native Americans and Europeans have certainly used these sites throughout the ages.
Yeah, and this predates Leif Erikson, was it?
Right.
Eric the Red, all mm-hmm. these Norwegian explorers who were presumably
right.
here, about 500 years ago, 600 years ago, before Columbus, around 1200.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking thousands and thousands of years before that. Where are some of the other sites located?
Well, there are actually several chambers in the South Woodstock area. There is a fascinating area in Rochester, Vermont, which is made up of stone cairns, which are many, many of them are built in round domes with, and many of them have a quartz rock set right on the center of the top, which indicates to us the possibilities of ritualistic reasons for them being there.
Mm-hmm. And in other words, they had something to do with worship or
right,
some religious
right.
Religious.
And then South Royalton is also another area that's very rich in stone sites.
Mm-hmm.
Putney, Vermont, Putney Mountain is just littered with them.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the major places, and then we have some outlying individual spots where there might be one chamber or and so forth. But those are the major areas where we find a lot of stone work.
And then there's one over in New Hampshire that's sometimes referred to as the Stonehenge of New England.
That's right.
Isn't there?
Tell us
about that.
Actually, NERA began over there. Our organization actually started their investigations with that site and then continued on into Vermont. And then the site over there was purchased by a former NERA member, he developed it himself. It's a very interesting site one that I've visited a number of times.
Yeah, and this isn't like the crop circles in England or here for them. It's not stuff that's appeared last week. These are things.
Oh no.
There's no doubt about it. These are not things that somebody stuck in the ground and said, "Hey, come here and look at this."
That's right. That's right. There's no way, and unfortunately, there also is no way for us to definitely find the exact dates because you can't carbon date an inscription.
Right.
At the Calendar 2 site, we did do an archaeological work on the chamber in conjunction with the Division of Preservation here in Vermont, the archaeologists that studied it did do some borings trying to find possible charcoal and so forth, but that was not found.
Yeah.
I understand there are some inroads into ways of being able to find out through inscriptions to actually document the ages, and I'm really waiting for that.
Yeah. Now, virtually all of these sites point to this point in time, the winter solstice, this our holiday season.
Not all of them.
Okay.
But many of them.
But many
do.
Of them do. Any,
yes,
any
of the chambers are oriented that way.
Yeah. Any sense of what the celebrations might have been like of Christmas 5,000 years ago here in New England?
Well, these were observances for religious reasons and planting and harvesting. I envision people dancing around some of these stones and
mm-hmm.
and sending prayers to Baal possibly and also his spouse Tanit, who is figured on another nearby chamber inscribed there
to bring back the sun, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's because this was the shortest day of the year. Yeah, fascinating.
And also, they also used other alignments. The summer solstice alignment is also indicated at the Calendar 2 site, to be able to determine when was the best time to plant their seeds, when should they harvest, and so forth.
Remarkable. Now, we're talking with Donna Martin of the New England Antiquities Research Association. Just one last question, Donna. How can people find out more about NERA? Is there a website? Is there a source
there
of information?
There is a website, and just one moment. I should be able to. Okay, yes. It's www.neara.org.
Great. NEARA, as in New England Antiquities Research Association. Donna
That's
Martin,
right.
The co-coordinator of the Vermont chapter of NERA, of the New England Antiquities Association. Donna, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Tom.
I do appreciate it. Have a wonderful day and a happy holiday season.
And happy holidays to you.
Thank you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You very much. Bye now. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. I just find that fascinating. We're going to get into other dimensions of this holiday time as the day goes along. But first, Nell in San Diego has an answer to Paul in Happy Camp, California's question, which he asked in the previous hour. Hey, Nell, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Hey,
this
Nell.
This is a hoot talking to you. I was hoping Louise would just take the information and you could read it, but she said I had to speak on air. So
okay.
I'm a bit nervous.
Well,
anyway,
we're just having a good time here.
I remembered reading that information myself, and so I knew it was on the White House. And I found it. It's a press release on whitehouse.gov, and the URL is www.whitehouse.gov/news/release/20010124-2.html.
Okay.
And that's basically what he says. Everyone who enters public service for the U.S. has a duty to the American people to maintain the highest standards of integrity in government. I ask you to ensure that every personnel within your department and agencies are familiar with and faithfully observe, yadda-da. And he's got a whole list of all these great, highly moral sounding.
And he talks about avoiding even the appearance of impropriety, as Caesar's wife was supposed to, I believe.
Yep, that's number 14.
There you go.
Employees shall endeavor to avoid any actions creating the appearance that they are violating applicable law or the ethical standards of applicable regulations.
Remarkable. Well, we've gone a long way downhill since then. Nell, thanks for the information, and Paul, you can track those numbers down in our archives as well, and plus probably you could find it with a search there. Thanks, Nell. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman Program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I wish a one horse open sleigh would come carry me away, but I've been waiting here all day and one just hasn't come my way.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. And Ellen Ratner is with us. It's time for our daily report from the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. The update on what's going on in our nation's capital and around the world. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. Isn't it amazing, Tom Hartman, that every time Rummy's in some trouble, he goes to Iraq?
Well, you know, he's doing penance right now. He's doing PR penance.
But if you were to make a thing of every time he sort of gets, you know, a graph, a chart, every time he gets into trouble with the press, he seems to wind up in Iraq.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it helps his image. It makes him look a little more like he's in touch with the soldiers, and he really understands that his policies have sent a lot of people to their death, and he's somehow got it.
And the other thing that's very interesting is, of course, what happened. The Washington Post today had a little scoop there, and they basically have said that on the 12th of November, the Secretary of State Powell went into a meeting with the President and Tony Blair and basically said, you guys got to put in more troops.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, this is interesting because, you know, last week there was a fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal asking the question, do we have too many troops in Iraq? And basically suggesting that we have become such an irritant there that the more troops we put in, the stronger the local opposition becomes. The more visible we are, the more irritated the locals are, and the more willing they are to support the insurgents. Because there's this old rule of thumb that you have to have at least somewhere between 10 and 100 local people willing to be silent in order for one insurgent in any country, whether it's Vietnam or Iraq, in order for one insurgent to stay in the area without being outed or exposed or killed off. And so, you know, it's sort of like mice, you know, count one, see one, count 100. And therefore, for this level of insurgency, there must be huge popular support for the insurgency, even though people don't say it out loud, and that we may be driving that. And if we increase our numbers, we just make it worse, like we did in Vietnam. What do you think?
I don't disagree at all. I mean, but, you know, we went in without the right equipment. We went in. As you know, our military correspondent says, every single problem like this is a chain of events.
Sure.
And this has clearly been a chain of events.
Hey, predictable. I mean, this is exactly what people before we invaded Iraq were saying. You know, the folks who were opposed to the war, they were saying, you know, we're going to end up with a house-to-house combat. We're going to end up in a quagmire. Don't underestimate the power of nationalism. People, they won't want us there, you know, after the first week or two, if that. And everybody said, you know, laughed at us. And it's a tragedy. It's a real tragedy.
The other interesting thing, you may have talked about this, I don't know, but now they announced yesterday that Medicare is going to be paying for people to get up to 8 sessions of essentially behavioral counseling so that they would stop smoking.
Mm-hmm.
They're only making that available to people who have diseases that were caused probably by smoking, heart disease, cancer, et cetera, or certainly aggravated, or who are taking medications. Why not give it to every person who is on Medicare who smokes?
Sure. And why not give it to everyone, period? So we have a national addiction problem here that's killing people. More people die from cigarettes than from anything else. 400,000 people a year. It's incredible.
That's right.
It's absolutely incredible.
And so our government, again, you know, they're doing the right thing, but they're not doing the whole thing that they need to be doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, step by step. Hopefully it'll get better. I have a lot of hope for Medicare. If we could just get it out of the hands of the Republicans. I mean, they're so trying to, I think they're trying to bust it. I think they're trying to break it. You know, they're claiming,
well, they're also trying to do that with Social Security.
Yeah, well, that's
the thing.
And
these private accounts.
Yeah, exactly my point. And then they'll be able to point to it and say, see, it's broken, and now we've got to turn it over to the corporations and let them make their money on it. Incredible. Ellen,
you have a great holiday, and I'll talk
you.
To you next week.
You too, Ellen. We'll see you next Monday. Thanks for being with us. Ellen
Thank
Ratner
you.
With the Talk Radio News Service. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Top labor lawyers are questioning the integrity of an El Salvadoran investigation into the murder there of a Teamsters organizer. The AFL-CIO and Teamster General Counsels are calling on the Institute of Human Rights at the Jesuit Central American University in San Salvador to do its own independent investigation. Gilberto Soto was murdered November 5th while making a cell phone call outside his mother's home in El Salvador. Soto was in El Salvador on Teamsters organizing business. Teamsters General Counsel Patrick Szymanski was given information on alleged irregularities in the El Salvadoran investigation, and the labor lawyers now want an independent probe of that killing.
On Wednesday, the South Bay Labor Council sponsored a gift giveaway for San Jose's low-income children. Over 200 volunteers, including seven Santas, helped distribute free toys to more than 10,000 children.
Norma Ray's union, Unite Here, has a new target in the South. HMS Host, the Charlotte Douglas International Airport food vendor. The Charlotte Observer says the union organizing campaign is underway to try to get the 700 retail and food service workers at the airport to join the union. Unite Here started in the Southern Textile Mills and recently organized one in Alabama that has a U.S. military contract, so the jobs there are likely to stay in the U.S. The South is often a hard sell for unions, but Unite Here's Harris Rayner says with the growth in the service sector, that's where the workers are now in the South, and so organizing efforts are underway. Unite Here has been holding meetings with the airport workers touting union membership. The target of Unite Here's organizing drive is owned by an Italian company and operates food concessions at 70 airports around the world. The Carolinas are among the least unionized states in the nation.
It's not a very merry Christmas for Arizona's immigrant population, as a federal judge lifted the injunction against Proposition 200 yesterday, allowing it to take effect. Approved in a state ballot initiative, the law requires state workers to check the legal residency of those applying for benefits. And if an applicant is found to lack proper documentation, the law requires state employees to report the person in writing or face a misdemeanor charge. Proposition opponents are planning to appeal to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Workers are not letting the Grinch steal Christmas this year. Walmart was voted Grinch of the Year Wednesday in a national poll conducted by Jobs with Justice. Walmart won the Grinch title for being the largest employer in the U.S. that treats its workers the worst. Jobs with Justice says Walmart pays poverty wages and sets such high barriers for health care that many workers have to rely on public aid and food stamps. George W. Bush was voted Grinch of 2003.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, ho, 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 and a bottle of rum. Run off to the
Caribbean. He thinks about boat drinks and fun in the sun. Ho, 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 and a bottle of rum.
And welcome back. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can also find archives at tomhartman.com and drop into our live chat room there if you'd like. Where the whole some of the finest conversations in the entire internet are to be found. The Reich Wing is at it, and boy, are they at it. One of the easiest ways to get people whipped up is to convince them that somebody's out to get them. And Bill O'Reilly seems to be leading the charge, as he so often does. He was, at least with Mel Gibson's movie, it made a certain amount of sense, since Bill O'Reilly was one of the investors in that movie, that he would be hyping that and say that by virtue of saying that people were opposed to it. But here now, Bill O'Reilly going on these rants about some folks there are out to get Christmas, and they're trying to steal Christmas and all this sort of thing. Rabbi Michael Lerner is with us. Rabbi Michael Lerner is the editor of Tikkun magazine, which I have, here, disclosure, I've written for, and I know Michael. He's a wonderful guy and a good friend. And also, Rabbi Michael Lerner, you are also the rabbi of a congregation in California, are you not?
Yes, in San Francisco, called Beit Tikkun.
Beit Tikkun, of a synagogue there, yes. And so... You wrote this marvelous piece, Christmas Wars, The Jews and Secularists Did Not Steal Christmas, But It Was Stolen. Who stole Christmas, Rabbi Lerner?
Well, I think you first have to understand that when people are saying something is wrong around Christmas, that they're really right. There's something has gone wrong, and many people feel that the spiritual message inside Christmas has really been lost. But that's not because Jews took it, and it's not because secularists took it away. After all, what goes on inside in Christmas really is what goes on in each family. But what is going on in each family is that the capitalist marketplace has managed to insinuate itself into the minds of our kids and actually into the minds of many of our families in such a way that almost everybody feels that in order to be a decent human being, they have to spend huge amounts of money, and there is this frenetic buying, an orgy of consumption. And of course, it rightly disturbs Christians and other peoples of faith. Yeah. But that's not because Jews have done anything to them. See, what O'Reilly tries to do is to say this. There have been civil liberties battles that have won for Jews and for secularists the following, that Christmas will not be imposed on everybody's kids in schools, in public schools, and it won't be imposed on people of other faiths to have their tax money spent to celebrate Christmas or any other religion for that matter. That was sort of the idea of the First Amendment. And
right.
So what O'Reilly does with those victories is say that's what's undermining Christmas, is that the Jews are not or those secularists don't want the kids to be forced to sing Christmas carols in school. But actually, that's not what's undermining Christmas. What's undermining Christmas is this orgy of spending, the materialism and selfishness. And there, you never hear the Christian right. Supposedly a champion of spiritual values, you never hear them questioning the values of the capitalist marketplace and its incessant demand for consumption.
Yeah. We're talking with the Rabbi Michael Lerner, editor of Tikkun magazine, author of Spirit Matters, Global Healing and the Wisdom of the Soul. The website, www.tikkun, T-I-K-K-U-N.org. And Rabbi Michael Lerner, Louise and I were talking about this morning. We were remembering that we're, you know, getting to be old farts here, and remembering back when we were kids, 30 years, 40 years ago, growing up in Central Michigan, and there was a strong in Southern Michigan. There was a strong community of Anabaptists and fundamentalist Christians, very, very austere fundamentalist Christians who did not believe in dancing, who did not believe in clearly drinking and partying and things. But I mean, they wouldn't allow the children to go to dances. They couldn't wear makeup. They had these sorts of things. They weren't the Mennonites. These were variations on the Baptist Church, and it was interesting. I don't recall them ever necessarily getting national publicity, but I may have been young enough that I just don't know. But I remember every year at Christmas time, there would be these local stories in the media in Lansing, Michigan, where I grew up, about how these groups were out protesting Santa Claus. They were protesting the commercialization of Christmas. They were protesting the fact that there were Santa Clauses in the stores. They were protesting the fact that stores were even saying Merry Christmas because it was taking a religious holiday and secularizing it and blaspheming it. And for some reason now, we have the so-called religious right, the folks like O'Reilly and this bunch, the Republicans and whatnot, who are using kind of the same words. You know, they're saying, well, you know, something wrong is being done to Christmas, but they have no problem with it being promoted as a commercial holiday. In fact, they're all in favor of it. They're trying to force Macy's to say Merry Christmas instead of Happy Holidays, and they're not talking about the issue that you just raised. Why would that be?
Well, one of the sad realities is that the Christian right has become a really wholly owned subsidiary of the large corporations, and they really have abandoned what was their moral foundation and sold themselves out to corporate power.
Wait a minute, you're saying that Jerry Falwell owes his allegiance to General Electric, which owns NBC?
I say that I don't know about the specifics. Metaphorically speaking, exactly that what you're saying is really true. That the Christian right has lost its moral bearing. It's just it has abandoned any moral vision beyond trying to be. I mean, it's sort of taken the worst of what you've just said of 40 years ago. I mean, let's say from my standpoint, I would not have liked the part of the Christian fundamentalists that were against pleasure and joy, and would have thought that had very little to do with either what Jesus was about or what the essence of Christianity was about. This was an imposition outside of the terms of the New Testament and certainly outside the terms of the Jewish world in which Jesus grew up.
Mm-hmm.
So being anti-pleasure or anti-fun or whatever, this really has very little to do with the essence of Christianity or any other healthy spiritual tradition my standpoint.
But my point is that...
But at least they had this other part. They had this part of saying, well, we want to keep purity around the consumption. We don't want to let our religious and spiritual values become about endless buying.
Yeah, and those folks are still out there, by the way, Rabbi Lerner. The Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah's Witnesses, and the Anabaptists, and many of these fundamentalist groups, they're still out there, but they're not getting publicity anymore. Instead, it's the Republican Party flax, basically, who are getting the publicity.
Right. Well, and I think that this is a terrible development, and when you hear the Christmas being spoken for by Richard Viguerie was on the National Public Radio Terry Gross's show a few weeks ago, and he said that Christmas was being stolen, and again he blamed it on the Jews and the secularists. Richard Viguerie was the really developer of the direct mail campaign for the Christian right to get them to give more money to the Republican Party, and these kinds of people have taken over from the more deeply rooted spiritual people. But you know, and what's tragic here is that there is, speaking as a Jew, I see a beautiful message, spiritual message underlying Christmas that has universal appeal, and it's the hope that gets reborn in moments of despair, you know, the light that gets relit in the darkest moments of the year, which is, in my view, beautifully symbolized by the story of a child being born of a teenage homeless mother who has to give birth in a manger because no one's going to give her shelter. She's escaping the cruelty of Roman imperial rule. It's local its local surrogate is this King Herod, who wants to kill the young children. And to celebrate that kind of vulnerable child as a symbol of hope, that eventually the weak, the powerless, the homeless would triumph over the rule of the arrogant and the powerful. That's a very incredible spiritual message and celebration that has strong analogies, by the way, with Jewish Hanukkah celebration, which
yes.
also celebrates victory of the weak over the powerful, and it's also about light in the midst of darkness. Of course, the pre-existing spiritual traditions of almost all communities celebrated the light in the darkness, and because, of course, this is the shortest days of the year. So these important spiritual messages have gotten lost in this orgy of spending, and here you have the Christian right just giving an idolatrous worshiper of the marketplace rather than staying true to its deepest spiritual truths.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Now, the thing that amazes me, Rabbi Lerner, is we're talking, by the way, with Rabbi Michael Lerner, www.tikkun.com, T-I-K-K-U-N.org, excuse me, his
.org,
website.
Yeah,
Tikkun Magazine, and author of Spirit Matters. What amazes me is that the core message of Christianity is found, and not just in my opinion, I would say in the minds of the majority of serious Christian writers who write about Christianity, is found in the Sermon on the Mount, sometimes referred to as the Beatitudes, and in Matthew 25, which is, there's this little scene where the disciples come to Jesus and say, basically, what do we have to do to get into heaven? And he says, in the end days, he's going to be sitting there separating the sheep from the goats, and he's going to say to one bunch, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me drink. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was homeless, you sheltered me. When I was sick, you healed me. When I was in prison, you visited me. And they say to him, we never saw you, hungry or thirsty. And he says, as you did to the least among you, you did to me. And that's the core concept, I think, of Christianity. And that is not at all being discussed by these folks who are talking about putting Christ back into Christmas. And yet that's also the core concept of Judaism that you so brilliantly promote in your works. And it is a concept embodied in one word, tikkun. Tell us about the word tikkun.
Well, tikkun is a Hebrew word. It means to heal, repair, transform the world. And that notion that we are... has been developed in the Kabbalah, the Jewish mystical spiritual tradition, in its main book, the Zohar. And its central notion is that we are created in the image of God. Of course, that's said in the first chapter of Genesis. But what that means, the Kabbalistic tradition teaches us, is that we have the ability and the obligation to be partners with God in tikkun olam, in the transformation and healing of the world. So we've created here an interfaith organization. Actually, a majority of our members are Christian, but a lot of Jews and Muslims also, called the Tikkun Community. And the Tikkun Community is seeking to work on all different levels to bring peace to the Middle East and to bring a new bottom line into American society. We're calling for a whole different ethos in American society. The bottom line now is money and power. We want to see a bottom line of love and caring and generosity and kindness. So
yeah.
We're
Amen.
Urging people who are interested to come, to go look to our website. You've mentioned it before.
Yeah. Tikkun.org, T-I-K-K-U-N. Michael, we've only got a couple minutes left. I've got somebody on the line with a question for you. Gene
sure.
in Hillsboro, Michigan is on the line. Gene, welcome. You are live with Rabbi Michael Lerner.
Hi, Rabbi. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a... This is one thing that's always kind of bothered me about this push to put Christ back into Christmas and all that kind of thing. And that's this. If Macy's were to say Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, wouldn't they be alienating part of their clientele that's not necessarily Christian?
Well, we're not urging Macy's to... we're not trying to give them strategies for how to increase their sales.
I know that,
right,
but...
That they may be right in doing that, and... in avoiding Christmas because they've got a lot of other people who don't really want Christmas. What I've been saying is for those who care about the spiritual integrity of Christmas, the way to fight to get that is not to get Macy's to say the right greeting, but to stop buying. And instead, there's a beautiful aspect of giving gifts, but the gifts don't have to be material. For example, if each person were to give to the people that they really care about a Christmas card saying on it, I offer you 4 hours of my time to do something that I can give you that's real. For example, to take care of your children, to help you with house repairs, to help you with gardening, to paint your house, to teach your kids or teach you some skill that I have, maybe painting, maybe art, maybe sports, maybe language skills, something that I know that I can offer you. Offering time instead of money, offering yourself instead of buying gifts. This is a way of giving that is not materialist focused.
Yeah. Well said. Gene, thanks for the call. That was Hillsboro, Oregon, by the way. Pardon me, I had a Michigan. Line 3, Scott in San Diego, California. We've only got about a half a minute left, Scott. Quick.
Sure, Tom. I'll be real fast. Chat room is great, by the way.
Thanks.
Listen, I remember reading about this holiday a long time ago when I was quite young, and I remember that it was originally a pagan holiday. And
actually,
when the Christians came around, they used to kill people for celebrating the original pagan holiday.
Scott, we're running out of time here. I'm gonna ask if Michael Lerner. Michael, can you stick around for another 5 minutes?
Sure.
Okay, great. Scott, Michael, both of you hang on. We'll come back on the other side of this break and continue this conversation about putting the spirit back in Christmas, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. It's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. So you find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Last week, the City Council in Salinas, California, capped a series of contentious budget debates with a decision to close all of its public libraries next summer, becoming the largest U.S. city to do so. WIN reporter Vinny Lombardo has more.
Charles Williamson called the council action shameful and says he's worried for kids whose parents can't afford the books, videos, and computers offered at the library.
We're making them stay poor and uneducated. It's not fair. It's not right. It's not what America's about.
It's a bad time.
Salinas Mayor Ana Caballero.
Universally, it's a bad time for cities and county government in our country.
Like many small and mid-sized communities, Salinas is facing huge budget shortfalls and tough choices about which programs to axe. Over the past year, spending was cut by $8.2 million, and the city no longer pays for road repairs, trash pickup, and other services. Closing the three libraries will save about $3.5 million a year.
It's almost like amputations. We're taking apart pieces that we really should be providing.
Caballero says she's not proud of the decision to shut the libraries and blames reduced revenues and state budget takeaways. Sylvia Garcia, a Salinas librarian, doesn't think that's a good enough answer.
And because the monies have been mismanaged, the community's going to pay the price.
In last month's election, Salinas voters rejected measures A and B, which, if passed, would have added up to $10 million annually to the general fund. Garcia says voters are being punished and wonders why the cuts weren't spread around.
There are many other departments within the city of Salinas, including fire and police, and yet the library is the one that was penalized the most.
While hiring of new police and fire personnel was put on hold, neither department experienced cuts. As for librarians, most are long-term and aren't sure what to expect after receiving their severance pay. Salinas residents will meet mid-January to discuss plans for a new tax initiative. For the Workers Independent News, I'm Vinny Lombardo.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Christmas jams at the tunnel shop to hustle or bustle. Snowing lights make wonderland out this concrete jungle. There's miracles on Thursday.
And welcome back. We were talking with Scott in San Diego and Rabbi Michael Lerner of Tikkun, Tikkun Magazine, the Tikkun community, Tikkun.org, T-I-K-K-U-N.org. And Scott, just real quickly, and we've also got Larry in Grand Rapids wants to get in on this conversation. We've only got about 3 minutes left here. Scott, your point very quickly in a sentence or so was...
Yeah, this holiday was originally celebrated as the first king in ancient police to kill the first man down the street or down the path and bury him for is celebrating the return of the sun and the return of life again. And this was Christmas was overlaid on top of that, and people were killed for celebrating the original pagan holiday, which did involve king for a night. In other words, you could do anything you wanted.
Right. I think that there's a broad understanding of that, Scott. Is there a question there?
Has been so changed. How did it go from we're supposed to celebrate the coming of new life to we're supposed to celebrate the coming of a new diamond ring or a new diamond necklace?
Yeah, good question. Thanks, Scott. Michael? Rabbi Lerner?
That's, of course, the central point is that we've lost the underlying spiritual message of hope and a return of light in the midst of darkness. And the hope was beautifully symbolized both for Jews by the Hanukkah story and by Christians by the birth of Jesus. And now the whole thing has been taken over by the capitalist marketplace and undermined.
Well said. Larry in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Happy holidays to both you and the rabbi.
Thank you.
Couple quick things. One is, as a Christian, they're not taking Christ out of my Christmas unless I let them.
There you go.
And secondly, if people want an inspiring story, go back and check the life story about St. Nicholas, the bishop, how he helped the poor and gave up his own family inheritance. That will help him capture take some of the commercialism out of Christmas as well.
Yeah, good point, Larry. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot in these stories that goes in the exact opposite way, but the essence of the stories is forgotten. So the idea of a Jesus as born from... A woman without a home in a manger amongst the least powerful and who gives birth to a child who is the symbol of the possibility of overcoming the powerful by the powerless. All of that is totally forgotten in this orgy of consumption. Similarly, there's a beautiful section in the book of Luke in the New Testament in which Jesus is talking about parties, and he says, if you're having a big party, don't invite your friends and your kinsmen, because when you're doing that, the reason you're doing that is so that you'll get re-invited back to their...
Invite the poor. You know, invite the disenfranchised.
Yeah,
we've got to wrap it up, Michael.
All the poor.
There you go. Rabbi Michael Lerner has been with us. Tikkun Magazine, tikkun.org, T-I-K-K-U-N.org, the website. Michael, Rabbi Lerner, thanks so much for being with us today.
I
do appreciate it.
To be here.
And I hope people check out your website. It's great work that you're doing. Very important work. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where we run rings around the right wing.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Top labor lawyers are questioning the integrity of an El Salvadoran investigation into the murder there of a Teamsters organizer. The AFL-CIO and Teamster General Counsels are calling on the Institute of Human Rights at the Jesuit Central American University in San Salvador to do its own independent investigation. Gilberto Soto was murdered November 5th while making a cell phone call outside his mother's home in El Salvador. Soto was in El Salvador on Teamsters organizing business. Teamsters General Counsel Patrick Szymanski was given information on alleged irregularities in the El Salvadoran investigation, and the labor lawyers now want an independent probe of that killing.
On Wednesday, the South Bay Labor Council sponsored a gift giveaway for San Jose's low-income children. Over 200 volunteers, including seven Santas, helped distribute free toys to more than 10,000 children.
Norma Ray's union, Unite Here, has a new target in the South. HMS Host, the Charlotte Douglas International Airport food vendor. The Charlotte Observer says the union organizing campaign is underway to try to get the 700 retail and food service workers at the airport to join the union. Unite Here started in the Southern Textile Mills and recently organized one in Alabama that has a U.S. military contract, so the jobs there are likely to stay in the U.S. The South is often a hard sell for unions, but Unite Here's Harris Rayner says with the growth in the service sector, that's where the workers are now in the South, and so organizing efforts are underway. Unite Here has been holding meetings with the airport workers touting union membership. The target of Unite Here's organizing drive is owned by an Italian company and operates food concessions at 70 airports around the world. The Carolinas are among the least unionized states in the nation.
It's not a very merry Christmas for Arizona's immigrant population, as a federal judge lifted the injunction against Proposition 200 yesterday, allowing it to take effect. Approved in a state ballot initiative, the law requires state workers to check the legal residency of those applying for benefits. And if an applicant is found to lack proper documentation, the law requires state employees to report the person in writing or face a misdemeanor charge. Proposition opponents are planning to appeal to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Workers are not letting the Grinch steal Christmas this year. Walmart was voted Grinch of the Year Wednesday in a national poll conducted by Jobs with Justice. Walmart won the Grinch title for being the largest employer in the U.S. that treats its workers the worst. Jobs with Justice says Walmart pays poverty wages and sets such high barriers for health care that many workers have to rely on public aid and food stamps. George W. Bush was voted Grinch of 2003.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
In the cacophony of Christmas commercialism, it can be difficult even to recall that it's about Jesus. But this is hardly the only time that Jesus gets lost. Take politics. In the recent presidential run, much was made by George W. and his handlers of his supposedly superior moral values based on his commitment to Jesus. But before we let Bush steal away with the robe of Jesus and don it as a Republican garment, let's reflect a moment on the moral teachings of this man from Nazareth. Like George, I grew up in a Methodist church in Texas. Unlike George, I didn't find any burning anti-liberal theology there. My little church might have considered itself conservative, but only in terms of its commitment to the deeply egalitarian, truly progressive values we found in the biblical teachings of Jesus. I recall many a sermon that began with Jesus' words in Matthew 19:24, "It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God." I recall that the greatest sin of all, the root of all evil, Jesus said, is the love of money. I recall the passionate retelling of how Jesus threw the money changers out of the temple, threw them out for charging interest rates far less than usurious bankers now charge us on our Visas and MasterCards, by the way. I recall also that Jesus fed all the masses that day on the hillside at the Sea of Galilee, not turning anyone away who lacked a platinum card to buy fishes and loaves. And I recall that Jesus flatly said, "You cannot serve both God and mammon." In the good book, Jesus talks more about economic justice than nearly any other subject, and the apostles made clear that the most important ethical religious test of Judeo-Christian faith is in how we treat the least wealthy, least important among us. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's call on Bush, and the Democrats too, to live up to these moral values before they claim that Jesus is on their side.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Happy, or merry, I suppose is the word, Christmas Eve. To those of you who celebrate Christmas, I'm one of them. Happy Saturnalia to those of you who celebrate Saturnalia, and happy Festivus to those Seinfeld fans who celebrate that. I believe Hanukkah is over, but we can still say Happy Hanukkah, I suppose. There's great commonality in a lot of these celebrations and festivities and holidays and the perspective around them, the very positive values that are held in many of these. And there's also some fascinating stories about the history of some of the of the non-religious components of our religious activities. And to discuss both of those, I have invited on the program today Dr. Stephen Larson. Stephen is the professor emeritus at State University of New York. He runs the Stone Mountain Center and is co-director of the Center for Symbolic Studies. The website is symbolicstudies.org. He's the author of a bunch of books, just a number of books, including most recently, Fire in the Mind, The Life of Joseph Campbell. Stephen was Joseph Campbell's friend and protege for over 20 years, wasn't it, Stephen?
Yes, indeed.
And he you worked with him when you were first getting your PhD. Is my memory correct?
He read all of my rambling attempts to create a PhD thesis and gave me very useful feedback.
Yeah, and I would say you're probably one of the leading Joseph Campbell scholars in the United States, the author of the only authorized biography of Joseph Campbell, and an expert in mythology and how it, you know, the history of mythology and how it affects us, how things are going. Stephen, let's start out first of all with just the idea of. And I want to get into the Santa Claus myth in just a second, but first I want to start out with the core concept of this holiday season for Christians. It's the message of you know, the birth of hope, of light, you know, the star in the sky, the baby Jesus, all that kind of stuff. And there's the similarities in Hanukkah, the lighting of the candles, the light coming, you know, the celebration of light, and the triumph of weakness over darkness. We just had Rabbi Michael Lerner on the program. He was talking about these common values. I think they're very real. Tell us about how those values informed religions prior to the birth of Jesus and prior even to the development of Judaism.
Well, Tom, one of my more recent experiences, or Robin and mine together, was actually traveling to the Arctic North in mid-February. We were invited lecturers at the Yukon Science Foundation, and when I told they were afraid that the Native Americans and the Inuit, you know, the Indian original people, yeah, and the Eskimo original people, the Inuit and the different tribes would take offense at our telling them about shamanism. But when they heard us give a sort of a Joseph Campbell-style lecture and realized the absolute ancientness and dignity of these traditions, they were enormously grateful, and they said, thank you so much for giving us arguments to meet those denigrating missionaries who tell us that they have the only true religion because it's so ancient and ours is simply pagan superstition. I think the best of our modern traditions lie on ancient tectonic plates of belief, and these extend way back into the origins of humanity and shamanism, which was the only religion that didn't rely on an organized church.
Mm-hmm. And to this day, is that's the case by and large, is it not? I mean, there are still many, many tribes around the world. In the 1800s, about half the population of the earth. Now it's down to around 5 or 10%, I believe, of indigenous people are essentially, how do you say it, are shamanic? What would you say?
Yeah, they're shamanic.
Yeah.
And the telltale sort of, you might say, signatures of shamanism, even though it's a preliterate tradition, the iconography of it is a man or a woman who goes into trance periodically, enters another realm to resolve something in this realm. So there's the idea of the out-of-body journey, the trance-like state, which often also mimics death and rebirth because the shaman does appear to be inert during this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Organized societies don't like shamans because they may return from the spirit world with some outrageous request.
do away with the king, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That the hierarchies may not like. So priesthood is a far more safe arrangement in which a hierophant still honors something that allegedly took place in the long ago, but it's a mythological covenant between another world and this world. But I know, Tom, you wanted to talk about Santa Claus.
Well, this brings us to Santa Claus because I think a lot of people who have Santas in their home and they're telling their kids tonight Santa's going to come and he's going to come down the chimney and he's this jolly old guy and he dresses in red, and red and white are the colors for Santa Claus, don't have any clue where the story of Santa Claus came from. And you first told me this, it seems like it was a decade ago, and it blew my mind. It just, and I wanted you to share it with our listeners. This is an old Scandinavian, Norwegian legend, as it were.
Yeah, well, the
or out
shamanism.
Of the, out of the shaman.
Shamanism tended to stay around the circumpolar region. Are you hearing me okay?
Yeah, it's just fine, Steve.
I'm getting a funny echo in the background, but okay. So anyway, my voice is back to me, so I may go into trance abruptly as we speak here. But in the circumpolar regions, northern Russia, Siberia, Sweden, Norway, across Arctic America, Iceland, Greenland, North America, they have what anthropologists or ethnologists refer to as Arctic hysteria, which is during these long nights, they go into especially visionary states. Nowadays, they just have seasonal affective disorder and take Prozac or commit suicide in those.
Yeah, or have terrible problems with alcoholism. But back in the old days, the shaman had a cure for that or a way around it.
They did, and I discovered this some years ago while researching Siberian shamanism, which I spent. That's where a lot of the great repositories are. The sort of communist inflection really sort of embarrassedly buried the old lore. But it has come back with a resurgence like these old ancient vital traditions do. And so what I stumbled upon, I'll just take you through the sequence a little bit. One of the things that Siberian shamans do or Russian shamans do to while away the winter is take hallucinogenic substances. And the most well-known of these is the Amanita muscaria, a type of mushroom in the Amanita family. You can even find it in the woods around here in New York State where I live, in the birch forest or the pine forest floors.
Now, Stephen, I recall in very often in the Christmas, the Santas that you see here, and certainly when I was in Northern Europe in Norway, they carved figures of these things, and with these little red and white capped mushrooms. Is that the Amanita mushroom?
That's the Amanita. It's a red mushroom with white little tufts on it, and it really does seem very festive. Oh, the forest is decorating itself for Christmas, as
uh-huh.
it were. Although it's earlier, it's a little bit before Thanksgiving that you'll see them around here. And I found a beautiful specimen one day while I was out running, and I said, oh, I don't want to pluck you because you're so resplendent, but I'll come back and get you in a day or two and harvest you. I came back, and it was neatly cropped off. The local deer love to eat them, and mm-hmm. We don't know what their states are, but they bound joyfully through the woods around here.
Well, now, and this gets—we only have about 4 minutes here left, Steve. This gets to this issue of the shaman. The mushroom is poisonous to humans, but reindeer's livers can process it so it's no longer poisonous. And then if you find yellow snow after the reindeer have been eating these mushrooms, and you make that snow into a brew. Then you can have flying reindeer? Is that where this came from?
Frank Zappa even has a song about about watch out for the yellow snow. Well, I found out that the shamans know about eating the mushrooms, and then a first shaman will eat the mushrooms and pee into bottles, and seven other shamans can drink from that. But the reindeer also know which shamans eat the Amanita, and the shamans know which reindeer eat the Amanita, so there's a whole yellow snow-eating thing going on.
This,
and so if you see a reindeer whose nose really does glow and who really is able to fly through the air, you could say in a sense it's a shamanic reindeer. Now Santa himself looks like an Amanita. He's got this red outfit, which it's marvelous that red outfit survives the many chimneys of the world as well as it does. But
mm-hmm.
actually in the original Siberian Sami or Iven tradition, the idea is that there's a smoke hole in the top of the yurt or the house that people are in, and he comes in through that, which is a much simpler feat logistically. Still, he has to make himself small.
Mm-hmm.
But shamans do travel vertically between the worlds. They also are known to be close to, you might say, the world axis. Joseph Campbell often used to talk about this. Eliade, the great religious historian, talks about it, that the North Pole is, in a sense, the axis of the world. He's close to the source of things. He has these animal spirit helpers, which are the flying psychedelically lofted reindeer.
And the elves.
Yes, pardon me?
And the elves. I remember Terrence McKenna in his book True Hallucinations talking about how when he took dimethyltryptamine, DMT, which is apparently the substance in Amanita, or similar to it, that he hallucinated, that his primary hallucination was always little people. And
little machine elves, he called them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, when he was taking synthetic DMT.
You know, Tom, I should just mention for the interested listener, Linda Leonard, the Jungian analyst, has a book out on this subject. She spent some time among the Arctic peoples and the lore of Santa Claus. And there was something in the magazine High Times, it may be a decade ago, on this idea of Santa as a shaman. There was something published by the Religious News Service, Pythia Pay, 1995, also on this idea of Santa as a shaman. And it's a very interesting thing. He has magical powers. He travels vertically between the worlds. He somehow knows whether we've been naughty or nice, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So he has, his psychic powers extend out. Those are the powers, in a sense, of the shaman.
And these are traditionally shamanic powers. These are,
yes.
Yeah, tribal people who have shaman consider this is just normal stuff for them. So the Santa Claus story that has been adopted into Christianity was really an ancient Northern European shamanic tradition. That's the bottom line of this. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's why Christmas is as rich as it is. You know, the Christmas tree is not a Middle Eastern invention. It comes from the North, as does these syncretic, wonderful syncretic images. Santa Claus, of course, morphs into St. Nicholas in the Middle Ages and is assimilated with that figure, but all his mythic iconography, his paraphernalia, the sleigh, the dwarfs, the reindeer are all from Lapland.
This is, yeah, from and the shamanic traditions. Remarkable. Thank you so much. We've been talking with Dr. Stephen Larson. Dr. Larson, professor emeritus of State University of New York, runs the Stone Mountain Center, co-director of the Center for Symbolic Studies, symbolicstudies.org, author of Fire in the Mind, The Life of Joseph Campbell, the only authorized biography of Joseph Campbell. Stephen, thanks so much for being with us today, and happy holidays to you.
Thanks to you all.
Thanks, Stephen. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This year, give a Christmas gift of inner peace, mental health, and transformation in the form of a fun, beautiful game you play with your body and brain based on meditation, breathing, and biofeedback. Go to opednews.com to click on the Wild Divine banner to order the game that Yoga Journal says turns the quest for calm into entertainment. In most games, you find weapons. With Wild Divine, you connect your computer to your body and play the game with your mind, heart, and breath. You find new abilities and awareness truly within yourself that you use to win the game and then apply in your real life. PC Magazine says Wild Divine is innovative and fun, and even better, it's very effective. And they give it 5 stars. It's shipped with both Windows and Mac software.
The Wild Divine game is a great Christmas gift that will make a real difference in a person's life. Go to opednews.com now and click on the Wild Divine banner to order it in time for Christmas. That's opednews.com. If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartmann.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Snow, snow, softly falling. The air still in the silence of my room. I hear your voice softly calling.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. It's Christmas Eve, the 24th of December. And it's just a beautiful day. Two of our three kids have now arrived here in Vermont, which is sweet. Our oldest daughter will be here after Christmas. Christmas carols. This is interesting. I heard a little piece on this morning on NPR and want to do a little more research on this. Turns out that an awful lot of Christmas carols were actually protest songs. Many of them originally were ways of protesting either religious tyranny, that is, particular churches that didn't want things said. For example, Catholics during the time that King Henry VIII had declared England as a Protestant nation and set himself up as the head of the Church of England. Or in some cases, caroling had to do with begging for food. The poor going from house to house, singing, and persisting until they were fed. But the original Christmas carols, which were sung in Europe thousands of years ago, preceded Christianity. They were pagan songs sung at the winter solstice celebration as people danced around stone circles. In fact, the word carols in the Old Anglo-Saxon, the Middle English, means to dance. I found this fascinating. Early Christians took over the pagan solstice celebrations for Christmas and transformed them. And it just makes sense. I mean, if you have people who have a particular set of traditions and you're going to change them to yours, you incorporate the two. And I think this has been done rather smoothly over the years, or at least the doing of it has been, the memory of the doing of it has been smoothed out, let's say. The first example of a recorded Christmas carol was in the year 129, AD 129 of the Roman calendar. A Roman bishop said that a song called Angel's Hymn should be sung at Christmas service in Rome. Another famous early Christmas hymn was written in 760 AD by Comus of Jerusalem for the Greek Orthodox Church. But many of these Christmas songs originally were written in plain song. That is, they were just, the average people making songs. And again, going back to the pagan songs, and the church didn't much like this. And so for quite some time, throughout the Middle Ages, actually, the 1200s and so, up until the mid-1200s, the church banned many of these songs, Catholic Church, or they required that songs only be sung in Latin, which was the official language of the Vatican and of the priests. It was sort of the secret language of the priests. And in 1223, St. Francis of Assisi changed all this. He started these nativity plays in Italy, and he had the people who came to the nativity plays sing what were called canticles, or the songs that told the story of the play. And this was really the beginning of it in the modern form. And he also introduced the idea of singing in a language that you could understand, in the language of the day. And then this led to traveling singers, which we today think, looking back on, they were called troubadours, jongleurs, or minstrels, singing songs. And they charged, in some cases, for this. They would come to communities. Very often, when they went from community to community, they would change the words around to reflect the local traditions. And the church didn't like them and tried to ban them. There was a whole other thing throughout the 1300s, 1400s, and 1500s of banning or fighting with the troubadours and the minstrels. And they became then, again, they became, Christmas carols again became protest songs and parts of the underground. And in a lot of songs, you know, 12 Days of Christmas, for example, embedded imagery and stories that a lot of people understood, a lot of people didn't, that had, you know, just like the stories that we tell kids, a lot of these myths that don't have anything to do with Christmas were actually, you know, the story of Humpty Dumpty, for example, goes back to making fun of the king at that time. And in 1647, Oliver Cromwell banned carols again. So it goes around and goes around. 29 minutes past the hour.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please hang up.
Having a hard time connecting with someone who cares? Try the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. They'll be there to help you when you need it the most, 24 hours a day. They'll even pay for the call. Simply call 1-800-448-3000.
Boys Town National Hotline, how can I help?
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Top labor lawyers are questioning the integrity of an El Salvadoran investigation into the murder there of a Teamsters organizer. The AFL-CIO and Teamster General Counsels are calling on the Institute of Human Rights at the Jesuit Central American University in San Salvador to do its own independent investigation. Gilberto Soto was murdered November 5th while making a cell phone call outside his mother's home in El Salvador. Soto was in El Salvador on Teamsters organizing business. Teamsters General Counsel Patrick Szymanski was given information on alleged irregularities in the El Salvadoran investigation, and the labor lawyers now want an independent probe of that killing.
On Wednesday, the South Bay Labor Council sponsored a gift giveaway for San Jose's low-income children. Over 200 volunteers, including 7 Santas, helped distribute free toys to more than 10,000 children.
Norma Ray's union, Unite Here, has a new target in the South. HMS Host, the Charlotte Douglas International Airport food vendor. The Charlotte Observer says the union organizing campaign is underway to try to get the 700 retail and food service workers at the airport to join the union. Unite Here started in the Southern Textile Mills and recently organized one in Alabama that has a U.S. military contract, so the jobs there are likely to stay in the U.S. The South is often a hard sell for unions, but Unite Here's Harris Rayner says with the growth in the service sector, that's where the workers are now in the South, and so organizing efforts are underway. Unite Here has been holding meetings with the airport workers touting union membership. The target of Unite Here's organizing drive is owned by an Italian company and operates food concessions at 70 airports around the world. The Carolinas are among the least unionized states in the nation.
It's not a very merry Christmas for Arizona's immigrant population, as a federal judge lifted the injunction against Proposition 200 yesterday, allowing it to take effect. Approved in a state ballot initiative, the law requires state workers to check the legal residency of those applying for benefits. And if an applicant is found to lack proper documentation, the law requires state employees to report the person in writing or face a misdemeanor charge. Proposition opponents are planning to appeal to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Workers are not letting the Grinch steal Christmas this year. Walmart was voted Grinch of the Year Wednesday in a national poll conducted by Jobs with Justice. Walmart won the Grinch title for being the largest employer in the U.S. that treats its workers the worst. Jobs with Justice says Walmart pays poverty wages and sets such high barriers for health care that many workers have to rely on public aid and food stamps. George W. Bush was voted Grinch of 2003.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
All the lights are coming on.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, tomhartman.com. Our website, if you'd like to drop into the live chat or visit our archives. And Merry Christmas Eve, as the case may be, or whatever your holiday is. Let me just honor them all. And getting back to politics here, getting back to the general issues of the day, just to wrap up a bunch of threads, the loose threads that have been rolled around here throughout the day and throughout the week, this being Friday as well. And plus, if you want to call on any topic at all, feel free, 1-866-889-8894. Somebody had called yesterday, in fact, it was right toward the end of the show in this segment, and asked, what happens if a senator comes out and says, I object, you know, joins a member of the House and saying, I object to the electors from Ohio because there appears to be, there's the appearance of the possibility anyway, of massive vote fraud in Ohio. There's evidence of it in Oklahoma now. There's evidence of it in New Mexico. There's evidence of it in Florida. Substantial vote fraud. And in every case, substantial vote fraud that dramatically worked to the benefit of the Republicans, specifically of George W. Bush. And for those of you who saw Fahrenheit 9/11, we had this spectacle of Al Gore, as acting as vice president and thus president of the Senate, reading the vote of the Electoral College, and person after person from the Black Congressional Caucus, members of the House of Representatives, coming forward and saying, I object, many of them from Florida specifically, I mean, that's where it started, saying, we object to this. Some 50, 60, 70,000 African Americans in Florida have been disenfranchised. Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush knocked us off the voting rolls. We couldn't vote. Bush is claiming a victory of 500 and some odd votes. Turns out it wasn't that at all. But in any case, he's claiming this 500-vote victory. And thousands of us who are legal, legitimate voters were thrown off the rolls in the weeks before the vote so that when we showed up, they wouldn't let us vote. There's something wrong with this. We want this investigated before we certify the Electoral College. And Al Gore would say, is there a senator who will join them? Because the Constitution requires a senator and a congressman or a woman. And there was no senator who would stand up and say, I will join. And so the vote, you know, and so it was uncontested. And George W. Bush became president. Well, this time around, there's a bunch of members of Congress who are talking about, and John Conyers has probably been the most outspoken, talking about the possibility that they will actually challenge the vote, that if between now and January 6th there is clear evidence, and it certainly seems to be that there already is clear evidence of vote fraud on the part of the Republicans, they're going to challenge this vote, and it requires a senator to go along with it. And people have been lobbying Barbara Boxer, and they've been lobbying Robert Byrd and others, Carl Levin. So I contacted a member of Congress and said, you know, what happens with this? And I got back this thing from the Congressional Research Service, which is an in-house analysis organization that works for members of Congress. And here's exactly what Thomas Neal said. He said, objections may be offered to both individual electoral votes and state returns as a whole. Objections must be filed in writing and be signed by one senator and one representative. If an objection is received and determined to be valid, then the electoral vote count session is recessed Okay, so if you get one senator, one representative to sign an objection, then that joint session of Congress pauses. The Senate returns immediately to its chamber, and the two houses of Congress consider the objections separately. By law, these sessions cannot last more than 2 hours, and no member of either house may speak for more than 5 minutes. At the end of this period, the houses vote separately to agree or disagree with the objection. So now you have the House of Representatives voting, do we go along with, say, John Conyers offered it, do we go along with this objection and say we really don't want to certify the vote of the Electoral College? And then you also have the Senate saying, do we go along with the objection of Senator so-and-so and object to certification of the, in this case, for example, the Ohio electors or not? And at the end of this period, the Senate then returns to the House chamber and the joint session reconvenes. The decisions of the two houses are announced. If both houses agree to the objection, in other words, both the Senate, the majority of the senators and the majority of the representatives in Congress, in the House of Representatives, both of them have to agree that they are going to dispute the electors. If both houses agree to the objection, then the electoral votes or votes in question are not counted. So you just take them off the slate. You remove Ohio, for example. If you removed Ohio, then would either candidate have enough votes to be president? Apparently not. Otherwise, the vote or votes stand as submitted and are counted as such. And I would say, with the House and Senate both in the control of the Republicans, odds are very, very slim that either body, and it's going to require both bodies, by a majority vote, would vote to say, no, we're not going to take the electors from Ohio. So I have a feeling this is a done deal. But that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a protest and that an investigation shouldn't be launched. I'm not saying that people should just give up and go away. But those folks who think that they're going to overturn this election, looks to me like it ain't going to happen. There's virtually no way it's going to happen. But who knows? I mean, maybe some incredible smoking gun is going to come out. Ed in San Juan Capistrano, California, on the line, 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Hey, Ed, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom. Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you. Merry Christmas to you, too, Ed.
I wanted to talk about Rumsfeld, but you know something? I really, really appreciate, as a man who's losing their sight and had a lot of problems this year, at least you're helping me. Thank you.
You're welcome. How am I helping you, Ed?
Well, you just give me a viewpoint. I can't get on the news. Like I say, I can't read anymore. So I have to listen to news, and the conservative talk shows are just, they make me so frustrated I want to scream.
Yeah.
But at least you've given me, you know, a chance to calm down and enjoy a little bit more of life.
Well, thank
and
you.
For that much, I got to thank you, Tom.
Well, thank
have
you.
Have a great holiday.
You're welcome, Ed. Is that what you called about?
No, I called about, I wanted to talk about Rumsfeld, but, you know,
okay.
Why should I be negative?
Well, feel free.
Okay.
I got to tell you, I am horrified by Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld was one of the guys who were the architects of this war. There were two factions within this administration who wanted to go into Iraq. There were the neocons, which was Rumsfeld, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, and Feith, and they wanted to go in because they had this born again belief. I don't mean in born again Christianity. I don't mean to put that down, but I mean it was this evangelical belief that if they forced democracy on some other nation, specifically Iraq, that it would number one, it would take and it would work, and number two, that it would then spread across the Middle East. And it's a nice idea, and it would be wonderful if they were right. But history shows that it's a screwy idea. So anyhow, there was that constituency, and then there was Karl Rove. Karl Rove wanted Bush to do an end run around the United Nations, which he did. You know, we pulled the UN inspectors out. We forced them to come out, not Saddam. He didn't kick them out. We pulled them out so that we could begin the bombing and attack Iraq before Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei had finished their job. And they had said it was only going to take a few more weeks, a month at the most. And he had to pull them out because they were about to say, there's no there. There's no reason to invade. This guy has no weapons. And Rove wanted that invasion to happen because he knew that no president in time of war in the United States in the 230-year history of this country has ever failed to be reelected. And he wanted there to be an active, hot shooting war going on in November of 2004 so that George W. Bush could get himself reelected. And so you had these two constituencies within the White House, and both of them, the Rumsfeld bunch actually... on my side of it, at least I will say I think that they were well-intentioned. Rove and Bush, who were doing this purely as a partisan move, and the timing, again, when you go back to 2002, they also timed this whole thing to spin the 2002 congressional elections, and I think that they're going to do it again in 2006 for those elections. I think they're ginning up Syria for that. Those folks I find just amoral, beyond the pale.
Well, absolutely. And I just wanted to say, I support our servicemen over there, but Rumsfeld went over there to make a statement. And on the news this morning, one of the servicemen handed him a cigar and said, "This is from Saddam Hussein's private collection." And I believe the United States and its troops should be above board on everything, and that includes looting. Yeah. And this man reached out and took a looted cigar. And it just upsets me, because we're trying to be the world leader. Yeah. Be the world leader in everything.
Well, this
your prisons and your looting, whatever it is.
Yeah, this is where the Bush administration has separated the United States from our traditional values. Traditionally, we led the world by example.
Absolutely.
We were the moral leader of the world. We helped create the United Nations. We were the leading force for the Geneva Conventions, at least the third round that outlawed torture. We were the ones that the world looked to when in Tiananmen Square in 89, I believe it was, or 87, I forget which year it was. Anyway, when 15,000 people marched into Tiananmen Square, many of them to their death. And many of them to imprisonment for the rest of their lives. They were carrying a 37-foot-tall papier-mâché statue of replica of the Statue of Liberty. They called her the Goddess of Democracy. They were reciting Thomas Jefferson. We were, before George Bush came along, we were the example to the world. We were the
most. Still should be.
And absolutely. And I think many people in the world for the last 4 years had been saying to each other, and I don't just think this. I know this. I've traveled around the world during the last 4 years. I spoke at Oxford University 2 years ago, and it was amazing. Before I could give a speech, and it's a great honor to be invited to Oxford to speak, and there was 200-300 students and professors in this room, and before I could speak, it was like prime minister's questions. I mean, these kids were yelling at me about, "Do you support Bush and his policies?" And I had to say, "No, I don't. I'm sorry." And I didn't quite know how that would be reacted to. And I got a standing ovation. And then they let me give my speech, which was about corporate personhood, which is a whole another topic, right? But the point is that for the last 4 years around the world, people have been saying to each other, "This isn't America that we're upset with. It's George W. Bush." A small band of right-wing cranks have taken over the government, and they're doing things that most Americans would never agree to. Most Americans would never agree. We saw the polls. The majority of Americans did not want to invade Iraq. The majority of Americans do want, you know, to have an ethical government. The majority of Americans are horrified that America won't sign the Kyoto Treaty. The majority of Americans do want there to be renewable energy in the United States so that they're not addicted to Middle East oil anymore. It's just, you know, the Bush family taking over $1 billion from the House of Saud and from the Bin Laden family over 3 decades for them and for the corporate interests that they're involved with. This is a specific problem. And they said, and these folks in the rest of the world, and they said, "And you just wait. In 2004, there will be elections, and Americans, having seen what these guys are all about, will throw this bum out." And now they're not saying that anymore.
I believe we did.
Well, I believe we did, too, but that's a whole other discussion. The reality is that the world doesn't believe that we did. The world believes that we voted to ratify the behavior of this administration. And therefore, now they're not cutting us that slack that they were cutting us a month ago.
Nope.
And it's going to get harder and harder and harder. Already now you have the European Union turning their backs on us. Their trade policies, they're not cooperating with us as they were. China's cutting deals now with Canada to become the second largest importer of Canadian oil. It could be 1 million barrels a day worth of oil coming out of Canada. Right now Canada exports 3 million barrels of oil a day to the United States. They're one of our leading suppliers of oil. China is right now, this is in the Wall Street Journal today, China negotiating a deal with them to take 1 million of those barrels. It's Canada turning away from us. They're building a pipeline with the Chinese across from Alberta, across to Vancouver, so that they, or to BC, so that they can get this oil out of there. It's like we have never been so isolated.
That Canada is our enemy.
Yeah. I mean, it's this divide and conquer strategy of the conservatives that is not only not only has allowed them to seize power in the United States, but they think is going to allow them to seize power in the world. And the comeuppance is going to come, and it's going to come hard, and it's going to be painful, and it's going to hurt. It already is.
That's what I'm afraid of.
100,000 dead Iraqis already. We've got 1,000 dead American soldiers. For what? Where are the weapons of mass destruction? I'm starting to sputter here. But
if I was there and you stole my cigar, I'd be mad at you.
Well,
that's just the way I am.
That's an excellent point. I mean, because it really is an example of how, after World War II, there were a lot of people who came back from Germany with memorabilia, shall we say.
Souvenirs, my father used to call them.
Yeah, and when people found out about it, when the army found out about it, they got down on them. Eisenhower didn't allow that. You know, it was not something that he was going to allow to happen. And we ended up, gathering stuff up, sending it back to Germany. A lot of reparations, as it were, that happened. And here, I didn't see this, but you're saying that Rumsfeld is celebrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He took a Christmas cigar, an early Christmas present, they said, on the news.
Yeah.
And they're not even smart enough to know that that's considered. I'm sorry, it's just a cigar. It's $1 or $10, whatever it is. No big deal. But it's just what it represents to the Iraqi people.
Yeah. Yeah. This is why? Because
if we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
No, we don't wait, because there's actually a presidential election coming.
This is a massive stockpile of biological weapons, and
sure,
it's capable of killing millions.
And
we know that
the
regime has produced thousands of tons of chemical agents, including mustard gas, sarin nerve gas, VX nerve gas.
And it goes on.
Halliburton sold it to him.
Yeah, well, it wasn't Halliburton, actually, but we sold the, Don Rumsfeld went over and cut the deal with Saddam, but we also knew that those things had expiration dates, that they ran out, and that they just ultimately were no good and couldn't be used. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate
Thank
it.
You,
good to hear from you, and happy holidays to you. Merry Christmas. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, where liberals fiendishly plot for total world domination. Yes, it's a joke. You never know with these cons out here.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxon Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Merry Christmas, baby. You sure did treat me nice.
Ooh. Refusing to be brushed off by Democratic opposition in the Senate, here's George Bush's Christmas present to us. This is from an article by Deb Reichman in today's Associated Press wire service. Actually, it was yesterday's AP. It's in today's newspapers. Refusing to be brushed off by Democratic opposition in the Senate. President Bush plans to nominate for a second time 20 people who did not receive up or down votes on their nominations for federal judgeships. These conservative judges, people who have outright endorsed racist positions, corporatist positions that are just so egregiously destructive to democracy, fiscal positions destructive of the middle class, that just total sellouts. These 20 federal judgeships, we'll go through a list of them next week. Some of these folks are truly frightening. And George W. Bush wants them to have lifetime jobs on the federal bench, deciding the future and fate, not just of the people who come before them, those accused of crimes or those who are seeking justice in the face of what they perceive to be injustice, but also defining your future and my future, because when federal judges make decisions, very often they set precedent, or they determine what is going to be sent to the Supreme Court that's going to set precedent. And these, the consequences of these decisions, the consequences of these rulings echo for decades, in some cases for centuries. And the Senate has been successful in keeping 20 of these people from being voted on by filibustering them. This is nothing new, by the way. When the Republicans controlled Congress and Bill Clinton was president, the same thing. The Republicans did the same thing to Clinton. Several of Clinton's nominees, they thought they were way too liberal. But now,
w.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about